Hey, Mr. Jessup, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day at the USDA to talk to me today.
No problem.
You probably have not heard of my show before, but I'm doing my best to bring the truth about the food that we eat every day to the table for my listeners, and having this opportunity to speak with you is a big help to me.
I'm here to help in any way I can.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, I have a few questions I want to ask you today. The first one is about the importation of produce.
You have to ask me nicely.
I'm sorry?
You have to ask me nicely.
Well, I was going to ask you nicely. What's with the attitude here?
I'm a fair guy, but this fucking heat is making me absolutely crazy.
Well, that's fine, but Jesus, don't take it out on me, man. I mean, I didn't do anything to you. I just came to ask you a few questions about your organization here that obviously doesn't do the job it's hired to do very well all the time. You know, what do you want from me?
I don't want money, and I don't want medals. What I do want is for you to stand there in that faggoty white uniform and extend me some fucking courtesy.
You know, this is what I mean. You government-run organizations think the chips are always stacked in your corner, but we the people, we've got a say here, and this is the kind of attitude that starts the ball rolling. This is why people are investigating your organization all the time.
You want to investigate me? Roll the dice and take your chances.
Well, maybe I will. We want answers.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Try me. I didn't come down here to be berated by you. I appreciate that you're taking the time to talk to me about food issues, but I'm not sure what you're expecting from me here.
I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
Well, I'm not going that quickly. I want to know what the hell is going on in here.
I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom.
I know, and you manage not to do that job more often than I could possibly fathom. You seem to know a lot more than you're telling the American public.
You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know.
So tell us, we want to know.
You want answers?
I think we're entitled to the answers, yes.
I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to. I got a
Hey everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. I need a vacation, man. Damn! We're talking about sushi today. I know it's a topic I haven't covered on this show before. No one's really clamoring, you know, to hear me talk about sushi. It's been talked about to death. But I want to specifically talk about a new experience for me anyway. Conveyor belt sushi, or Katen sushi. Katen? Did I pronounce that right, Joe? Help me out. It's a popular form of having sushi in Japan. Basically, it's on a conveyor belt, and it comes around the tables. Like, you know, y'all sit in a circle, and this conveyor belt just goes around, and they put sushi on it, and then you pick off the plates you like. I've never seen it before. Now, I know it's all over Japan. It's really popular in Japan, but I've never seen anything like this in California. Now, mind you, I live under a rock most of the time. I've just really started going out to eat on a semi-regular basis within the last year or so. So, there might be a ton of places like this out there, I just don't know about them, but this was my first Sushi-licious right here in Irvine. Outstanding. Very cool. I want to talk about that. We'll get to that in a bit. I was saving this beer that I had to review here on the show, but Don came down a couple weekends ago. We filmed the taco truck video. I figured it was best to share it with somebody. So, I cracked it out so we could have it together. You know, when you get really good beers, when you get really nice beers, you go, man, I don't want to drink this by myself. Not to say you people aren't worth it, but I don't want to sit and drink a beer by myself. And, you know, sometimes something like this, I want to share it. It was a bottle of 2009 Allagash Fluxus. Allagash, of course, is a fantastic microbrewery from Maine. Rob Todd, head brewer, super, super nice guy, down to earth. Very easy guy to talk to. I met him at the GABF a few years ago. GABF, looking forward to that. That's in September. Is that the vacation? No, we're going in May. Going to Hawaii, mind you people. Going to hit Hawaii. GABF is coming up in September. So put that on your calendars. I hope you guys are you know, at least some of you are looking forward to going there. Because it's going to be a riot. Anyway, I'm there, right? And we're in this cellar. I think we're at Flying Dog. Can't remember where we were. Can't remember a lot of stuff back then. Anyway, there's heavy hitter brewers down there walking in one after another, and they're all kind of in their own pockets. Everyone wants a touch, you know, a piece of them. And Rob Todd's standing there, just starts talking to me like, you know, which he is. You know, he's a very heavy hitter. And it just makes him extra cool because he talks to you just like you're somebody. And it's cool to talk to brewers, man. I think brewers are like rock stars. Anyway, this beer that he brewed, this Fluxus, very interesting beer. Katrina gave it to me at Christmas, kind of like a stocking stuffer gift. $17 for a 750 milliliter bottle. So I figured it was a special occasion beer. It's a Saison, but it's brewed with black pepper and sweet potato. Now, you can really go wrong here if you overdo it with pepper. I've made stocks with peppercorns before and used too many. And, you know, if you make a stock and you put too much pepper in it, it gets really choppy. Sometimes your guests won't, you know, like the spice. It gets too hot. But as it was, the pepperiness in this beer, in this Fluxus, was not overwhelming. In fact, it was really subtle. So subtle to me that I think that the pepper I was tasting came from the Saison yeast. That's what I think. And then the sweet potato was a flavor I didn't get at all. Don said he could taste it, but you know, I think maybe he's got a bit of a more discernible palate than I do when it comes to this stuff. It looked like a Saison. It poured like one. It had a big, fat, thick head that didn't dissipate at all. Tasted like a Saison, just a bit spicier. It was a really, really good beer. On top of it all, it wasn't overcarbonated, which would have completely killed it. Very good beer. I drink this thing anytime. 8.5%. It's really not going to kick you in the ass. I'm not sure I'd plunk down $17 for it. I mean, it's a pretty pricey beer, $17. But it's nothing, you know, it's nothing I wouldn't drink again. 2009 Allagash Fluxus. So, there's just short of kind of a review for that. Sorry I couldn't wait for the show, but hey, I had company. So, Sushilicious. It's this new sushi place opened here in Irvine last month. It's a sushi restaurant. I knew this place was opening for a long time before it opened because Daniel, who owns Sushilicious, starts following me on Twitter, sends me updates and stuff. You know, I love sushi. And I'm thinking, I don't know how I met him, where I met him. He's clever. I thought he was a friend of Joe's or we met somewhere at one of these, you know, functions. I didn't know. So he's talking to me like he knows me. And a really, really cool guy. Just really nice, friendly, working on the restaurant, sending us updates, sending us pictures of the place gutted and, you know, how they're working it up. And listen, I love a lot of things Japanese. I'm just into that thing. I'm into that culture. I love a lot of the qualities. I definitely love the food. I'm a big fan of a lot of the movies and the culture. It's just cool. It's got a lot of history. There's not a whole lot not to like about them. And a majority of Japanese people, extremely friendly. I mean, just nice people, down to earth, grounded. When this place finally opened, I realized how incredibly cool this whole thing was going to be because there's never been anything like this around me. You know, like I said, there might be some restaurants like this in Southern California. I don't know about them. But again, I don't get out that much. And I'm not the first one to say it. But there's a lot of cool things about Sushilicious. The coolest part about the business is the fact that all of the marketing has been done via Twitter, Facebook, social media outlets. Nobody in Orange County that I know of has ever done that before. So it really is a sign of the times that somebody can get the word out of the restaurant using social media, which is kind of cool. I think that's what social media was made for. Well, that and plugging your podcast. Okay, so another thing I'd not seen in Orange County before was a sushi bar that was run on a conveyor belt system. Sushi rolls right around you on a plate with different colored rings on them. The colors represent how much a dish costs. It ranges from a green plate at $1.50 to red plates at about $4. And the sushi chefs are always there. They're making sushi rolls, sashimi dishes, whatever needs to be replenished. And if there's anything you want that you don't see, ask them and they'll make it. I mean, it's like a regular sushi bar. So as the dishes roll past you, you see what you like, you pick it, you put a plate on your table, you have your sushi, and then when you're done, your concierge comes by, tallies up your plates on your iPod Touch, sends your bill to the in-house computer that they have, and that spits out your receipt, and then you pay your bill. That's how it works. They've got this system that monitors the length of time that each plate has been on this rotating belt. After a certain period of time, the sushi chef is notified that this piece of sushi has been there too long, and he removes it immediately and replaces it with a fresh piece. And it was explained to me that if you go in there on off-peak hours, that belt is never really super full. During the lunch rush or dinner service, of course, it's going to be packed. They're going to be making more sushi, and it's always going to have more and more stuff on it because, of course, they've got more people eating. But the reason why during off-peak hours it wouldn't have a whole lot on it is because it would be a giant waste of food if these dishes went bad because they didn't have a lot of people there to buy it. You know, the sushi chefs are always there to make stuff for you by request. So it's just like being in a sushi bar. You know, like you would normally go and you would order stuff from the sushi chef and he'd make it for you. Just order what you want. You can do that anytime. You go in there if you see something that you want, but, you know, it's not being replenished. Ask him for it and he'll make it. We did that. The staff are incredibly nice. I mean, this guy has got this thing wired. You know, you go in there, you might have one main concierge, but any of them working there will check on you to make sure that you're getting what you want, make sure that you're having a good time, and that they're ready to fulfill any request that you might have. They're there for you. It's really rare to get this kind of service. Everybody's smiling. He's got a manager running the front of the house. He's just fantastic. It's a team that works like a team. They don't work like individuals where this is my table, these are your tables. No, they're all working together. And as far as the sushi goes, it's absolutely delicious. Very fresh, very inventive things, really interesting sauces. They've got a bottomless tempura plate for $8. No shit. Seriously, decent vegetables and tempura, all you can eat for $8. A really good experience for us. One of my favorite things that they make, something I've been trying to duplicate here at home since I had it, is spicy tuna on crispy rice. It's ahi tuna that they grind into a paste for the most part. Then they spice it with sriracha sauce. They place that on top of this ball of sushi rice that has been lightly fried on the outside. They top that with a little sliver of jalapeno. Jesus, that is awesome. And fried sushi rice balls, like a little tater tot. Just fantastic. I mentioned the all-you-can-eat tempura, right? That reminded me, I wanted to tell you guys about this place we visited a long, long time ago, years before the podcast and anything. There's this all-you-can-eat Japanese seafood buffet here in Orange. I'm not going to mention the name. It's got a full sushi bar, all-you-can-eat sushi. Lunch is like $18, dinner I think is $25. But it's all you can eat. Listen, when it comes to buffet, there is such a thing as too much. And a sushi buffet is too much. The quality of fish is not really all that great. Not like you would get sick by it. It's just not sushi quality like you'd expect really good fish. I mean, you know really good sushi. It melts in your mouth. It's got the flavor of the sea. It literally takes you to the ocean when you eat it. That is good sushi. And a good piece of sashimi, you're not going to get that at an all-you-can-eat sushi buffet. It's just kind of, I don't know if it's low-grade fish. It's not incredibly tasty. You go for sushi to have an experience. A solid, memorable experience. Something you'll remember next week. You'll remember that piece of fish you ate that just sent you into heaven. Fish heaven. You're not going to remember that third trip to the sushi bar to get your money's worth. And overdoing it on sushi is just a bad idea anyway. That rice expands in your stomach, you feel guilty because you overate. But buffets in general? Kind of evil. Buffets are where food goes to die. It sits under lamps, it dies. What I love about Sushilicious is that it provides that little excitement that you get from buffets. You see food, you go, oh, I want that, you take it. You can wait for the next round, but if you like that, you can have it now. Or you can wait to see what the next thing comes by. It's fun. It's delicious. It's memorable. Sushilicious.com, that's the website. He's on Jeffrey in Irvine. His website is in progress right now. It's still new. I wish him all the luck in the world. It's a very fun thing to have conveyor belt-driven sushi and have those plates just flying by you.
Apparently green eggs aren't just found in the Dr. Seuss classic.
You almost don't want to eat it because it's so pretty.
I know.
We're at the Organic Soul Food Chicken Farm an hour from San Francisco. It's a business that stirs such passion that loyal customers refused quite literally to let it go down in flames. After a fire killed 1,200 chicks and destroyed their coops last September, Alexis Kofod and her husband Eric thought the struggling farm they started just 3 years ago was finished.
Did you think you were going to be out of business?
Oh, I was convinced we were done. You know, we'd already were skating by. Eric had lost his job. We were just living off of this land. That was a half month's income that went up in smoke, and I thought, I'll never recover from that. It's just too hard.
Starting the farm wasn't easy. Alexis and her husband had no farming experience. She was in marketing. He was a structural engineer. Yet as soon as they began selling their chicken eggs, many chefs from the finest local restaurants, including Alice Waters from the nationally renowned Chez Panisse, said they were among the best they ever tasted.
And I said, if you grow something that really is tasty, I'll buy it all.
The farm was saved not just because of its high-quality eggs and meat, but also because of its philosophy.
This egg comes from chickens that are probably crammed in cages, maybe 8-10 birds in a cage.
She explains by showing us two different eggs, one from a chain grocery store and one of hers.
And this is a chicken egg that she got to lay her egg, how she felt like after being outside eating grass and bugs.
This is what those chefs like so much, what you're seeing right here. The chickens roam the fields freely and eat the natural grass. And that, they believe, makes for a higher quality egg. Eggs they apparently could not live without, because when the fire seemingly destroyed the business, her customers got together and said, we're not going to let that happen.
We had a fancy auction. We had a raffle. We had several fundraising dinners.
Bonnie Powell led the effort to raise $30,000 to keep the farm in business.
It was kind of amazing how many people just felt touched by this. Like, no, we can't let Soul Food Farm die.
The farm still struggles to make money, but Alexis loves her land, loves her way of life.
Thank you very much. My husband will be excited.
You could say she's just fine putting all her eggs in one basket.
Thank you.
I got a chance to catch the first couple episodes of Future Food on Planet Green. I pulled some clips of the show for you in case you haven't seen it. The show follows molecular gastronomists Hamaru Kantu and Ben Roche. They're renowned chefs. They've been all over the place. Successful restaurateurs. They've been on Iron Chef America, No Reservations, you name it. But these guys aren't just chefs. They're nerds. And the show focuses on these two guys looking for solutions to some of the world's most pressing environmental issues through the use of molecular gastronomy.
Our idea is to make something that looks like fish, tastes like fish, but it's not fish.
We got to take this over to the lab and investigate it a little more.
Modo is one of the only restaurants in the world that has a state-of-the-art science lab where we can experiment with molecular food concepts.
So if we can make something that's safer for the environment, that tastes better than the real thing, we're going to take over the world just with fish.
So the first dish we're trying to create is a seared tuna out of watermelon.
I want someone to actually eat this and think, oh my God, that is tuna.
Take the watermelon and we cut it into the shape of tuna. Then it gets seasoned with Envision, salt, nori powder. It's going to make the watermelon taste a lot less sweet than it normally would.
Now that it no longer tastes sweet, we're going to put it into the cryovac machine. It's going to suck all the air out of the bag.
Cryovac is just a way to suck all the air out of it and suck all that flavor from the nori into the watermelon.
Oh, God. So that's really starting to look like a tuna.
And then roll it in a Togarashi sesame spice mixture and then freeze it in liquid nitrogen to create that seared look.
Oh, my God! Okay, so we have our tuna loin. I mean, I don't know about you, that's the best damn seared tuna I've ever seen in my life. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
Next, we are going to attempt to make scallops from tofu. We took a European theme with this dish, scallop and bouillabaisse. Bouillabaisse is the fresh catch of the day in France.
So you got the tofu, we're putting it in the food processor.
Let's add some egg whites to that. And then reset it with transglutaminase.
Transglutaminase is basically what they use in hospitals as liquid band-aids. It'll fuse proteins together. In this case, we're taking the egg white, rebinding it together with the tofu to create that scallop texture.
After that point, when it's all mixed together, we put that into a rubber mold that looks like a scallop and fill it with the bouillabaisse puree, and then it's a scallop.
The liquid nitrogen has the knack of chilling it down to -321 degrees Fahrenheit. We're not freezing it. We're just chilling it down rapidly. And if we did this in the cooler, it would just take forever. And then we'll just sort of roulette it so it looks like a scallop.
It's
the best damn synthetic soybean scallop I've ever had.
You know, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of money to bring that seafood in, whereas these soybeans literally grow right here in Illinois.
And it's just a smelly. The seafood dinner without actually having seafood was news to me, because everything actually tasted like seafood.
It's cool stuff, of course. You know, I love molecular gastronomy, and I think it's awesome that there's a show dedicated to it. I've been dreaming, and here was my idea, that they'd have a cooking show, like a how-to show, on molecular gastronomy. Have somebody who's really good at it, like these guys, and show you how to do stuff. That's not what this is. And if there's one thing about the show that I don't really care for all that much, is this environmental angle. I'm not an anti-environmentalist, don't get me wrong. It's on Planet Green for a reason. Perhaps maybe that's what allowed them to sell the idea to Planet Green in the first place, by taking this angle. But I find it a little silly. You take a piece of watermelon, coat it in nori, roll it in sesame seeds, then serve it to make someone think that it's tuna, only to find out that it's actually watermelon once they taste it. That's fun. That's what I like about molecular cooking. But to do this because we're getting low on tuna, in the environmental impact that tuna fishing has had, so we're trying to find a replacement for tuna, and this is going to replace tuna, no. That is dumb. Call it a fruity tuna substitute, but certainly don't try to call it tuna, because it's not tuna. There's no replacement for tuna. If tuna gets overfished, we'll just have to live without tuna. But fake tuna, no thanks. That's why imitation crab is evil. Imitation lobster is evil. Imitation anything is evil. Mocha mix is evil. Mocha mix is not half and half. Look at the ingredients on mocha mix. High fructose corn syrup, all that shit that's in it. No, look in the side of half and half. Cream, milk. It's a whole food. We don't want imitation anything. It's not crab. If you want crab, eat some crab. If you can't afford crab or there is no crab, eat something else. Try the chicken. But Future Food, Tuesdays on Planet Green, great show, fun show to watch. If you're interested in molecular gastronomy and want to see the many tricks that these guys can pull off. A little nerdy, but a lot of fun. So ABC has a new show on Fridays, Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution. And it's got such a great message. I'm just so happy that the show's on TV. It's been a long time since I've talked about the fact that our school lunch programs here in our country leave a lot to be desired. It seems like, I think it was either in the toward the end of the first season or early on in the second season of My Life as a Foodie, we were discussing how badly we needed some kind of reform. Then Kirk, who lives in Europe, settled me down after a while. He told me that it's a lot more common in Europe. And in Europe, they do it right. And maybe it was these stories, I was playing these stories from Europe, that, you know, they were buying stuff from local farms and the kids were eating local farmed food, whole foods. And it was great to see kids eating real food instead of the crap that we're serving kids. And he said that in Europe, they're dealing with fewer children in schools, so it's easier to pull these things off. We're far more widespread here. We've got far more mouths to feed, and the government will simply only provide so much. But that's not really the reason why we're not doing it. We're not doing it because children are going to school, and they're having pizza for breakfast. And it's easy to make pizza for these school cafeterias. You stick pizza in the oven, it's frozen, you stick it in the oven, and you pull it out in 20 minutes, and hey, you're a chef. And the kids love you because you're giving them pizza for breakfast. They love that. Kids love chicken McNuggets and pizza and tacos and colored milk. Meanwhile, it's unhealthy. They're unhealthy. They get fat at an early age. Onset diabetes. You know the drill. We've talked about this to death. So his show opens the whole thing up for you so you can kind of understand just how bad it's gotten in this country.
Welcome to beautiful Huntington, West Virginia. Population 50,000, home of Marshall University, and recently named the unhealthiest city in America. In a place where nearly half of the adults are considered obese and incidence of heart disease and diabetes lead the nation, one man will try to save 50,000 lives.
How you doing? I'm Jamie.
Jamie Oliver, renowned British chef, who transformed the British school food program.
Everyone can do better.
Has left his family behind.
Bye, Daddy.
And come to our shores to take on the biggest mission of his life, to lead a food revolution
I'm here to show America just a little effort can make a massive difference.
But in this town, the revolution will meet resistance.
What are you here for?
The results came out that this town was the most unhealthy town in America. This is a government statistic based on death.
We don't want to sit around and eat lettuce all day.
I don't think Jamie's got anything that can change this town. He can try all he wants. I don't think he's got it.
I thought there was only miserable bastards like that in England.
How's your pizza for breakfast? In all of my years, I've never seen pizza given for breakfast. Who knows what this is?
Potatoes.
So you think these are potatoes? This is the future of America. Are the fries counted as a veggie?
The fries count as a veggie.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? What's right with that? Would you eat that?
Yes, yeah, something it's good.
I'm talking about causing a big fuss and changing things. Change.
Yeah, okay.
They don't understand me because they don't know why I'm here.
He hopes to change Huntington's health forever.
If you think that's not important, then shame on you. This is the fat consumed by the entire school for 1 year. This is the first generation of kids expected to live a shorter life than their parents. Will you support me?
Yeah! I'm talking about a seed of change. I'm talking about schools. I'm talking about fast food industry. I'm here to start a revolution, the biggest food revolution that this country's ever seen. Am I living in a fantasy world?
We can let you try and see.
It's Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution.
Eat your vegetables!
So he's trying to drum up interest in his project, right? And immediately he meets these people who don't want him there. It's a bunch of people there that are really just don't want him there. They don't want a British guy coming in, telling them how to live, how they need to eat. Like this prick morning zoo jackass, Rod the Dog Willis. That's his name. He so wants desperately to be Howard Stern. You can tell this guy wants to be Howard Stern so bad he can taste it. But instead, he looks in the mirror every morning and sees himself. Sorry-ass motherfucker. Morning zoo in the middle of freaking Virginia.
Country favorites and fun, 93.7 The Dog. Folks, Jamie Oliver is in town. He's on some kind of a mission, and we just don't know exactly what this mission is, so he's here to explain it to us.
How you doing, man?
First off, let's just get up and say this. What are you here for?
I'm here to start a revolution, a food revolution in Huntingdon, West Virginia.
The biggest food revolution that this country's ever seen. Last year, the results came out that this town was the most unhealthy town in America.
Why would you say that we are? Because there's other cities that have the same problems that we have.
Because this is a government statistic based on death. Based on disease.
So you're saying that we die quicker than anybody?
Yes. This area is the most unhealthy in America.
Right, but we don't want to sit around and eat lettuce all day.
Yeah, but I'm not going to cook you a lettuce.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, you come to town and then you say we're going to change our menus and all that. I just don't think that you should come in here and tell us what to do. I mean, who made you the king? You think when you leave here in two or three months,
you know
things are going to be turned around?
If everyone in America was like you, you would get nothing done. You can't be, oh, that won't work. You'll never do that. Oh, you're going to be 3 months. What are you going to do?
So what you're saying is when you leave here, everybody's going to be eating healthy and everybody's going to lose 50, 60 pounds.
I would never, ever say that. I'm talking about a seed of change. I'm talking about not just at home. I'm talking about schools. I'm talking about fast food industry and the restaurant industry. I mean, I'm opening a shop in town. It's a place where anyone can come in, and if they want to learn how to make a few dishes that don't cost the earth, we'll have people teaching them there. I suggest you come along and I'll teach you how to make a couple of things which don't have lettuce in them.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how things turn out. Jamie Oliver has been our guest this morning, folks. I really take issue with a guy coming into town and telling us how we should conduct our lives.
That didn't quite go the way I thought it was going to go. I thought there was only miserable bastards like that in England.
I don't think Jamie's got anything that can change this town. He can try all he wants. I don't think he's got it.
When I drag that grumpy old git down to a school or the cooking center and he sees people in need getting filled up with the tools for them to look after themselves, he's going to shut up.
These people are so rude and so backward. It's appalling that people can be like this. It's embarrassing as an American to see someone from another country coming and trying to help you and have your people treat him that way. So rude. And let me tell you something. There are some backward-ass bossy people in this particular town that he's in. They make blanket statements. They put words in his mouth. They do not get it. Like Alice, the cook. And I put quotes around that word, really. She's the epitome of a bossy bitch of a woman who runs the show, God only knows, the guy she's married to, if she's married to a dude, he's a, can I use the word pussy whipped? Have I used that too much? Please. She runs the show. Believe me. She doesn't want to let it go. Completely short-sighted.
So there's five cooks, Paulie, Millie, Linda, Luana, and Alice. So Paulie's in charge, but it's obvious the real boss is Alice.
I got a question. What's tomorrow? What are you fixing tomorrow?
Are we called to talk about that later?
Not really. No. I don't understand why he is here to change our system, which is working good.
So how long have you been a lunch lady?
A lunch lady?
What's your official job title? Because I was...
Just cook, I guess.
So how long have you been a cook?
20-some, 21.
So how many kids you cook for lunch?
We usually plan for about 450.
I think those girls are lovely, but the thing is that I know they probably can't stand me at the moment, because who the hell am I coming from England into their school, having a look and asking questions about the stuff they've done for 10 years? What else are we preparing for lunch today?
Mashed potatoes.
We should probably start peeling potatoes soon then, eh?
Peeling potatoes.
Peeling potatoes. No.
Okay, what do you do then?
We have something that's wonderful called potato pearls.
So how do you make this stuff? Is it you basically just add water, pour in the pouch of potato pearls?
This is a cook's best friend.
Is it really potato?
I hope so.
You hope so?
Potatoes, the first ingredient.
Yeah. Along with hydrogenated canola oil, monoglycerides, artificial colour, and lots of salt.
It's not mashed potatoes. It's this stuff out of a packet you mix with, like, hot water.
It thickens quick.
Just stir it really, really good.
So there's a real knack to this, then. And
you need to pour that. That's
just
it.
Just put it in here. Pour
You'll
in.
Never get it out.
So this sets like concrete, then, basically.
Concrete? There it goes. No.
And they're like, you know, whisk it fast, otherwise it will set real hard and you'll never get it out. And I'm like, what is this stuff?
It tastes like starchy fluff with off nuts in it. Absolutely disgusting. I know it's only mashed potato, but when I start looking at mashed potato, then the nuggets, then the pizza, then the milk's got crap in it, the cereal's got crap in it, all of those little things together pisses me off. And if you're a parent, it should piss you off. And I'm telling you that I've been to South Africa in the townships and they're getting better food than your American kids. Now, if I were you, I'd be really pissed off. What I'd love to do, just to get my head around what's going on in the freezer.
And when I went in the freezer was just basically an Aladdin's cave of processed crap.
Okay, so this is pizza for tomorrow, yeah?
Yes.
So you have pizza for breakfast, but then they have it for what, lunch tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell. So this meat is already cooked, yeah?
Yeah. When it grows up, it'll be scrambled eggs.
So that is scrambled egg? I've never seen that before.
It's egg. We steam it.
I didn't know what most of it was. And when I don't know what something is, the alarm bells go off, and I would not ever feed that to my kids. Ever.
I'm not getting a good feeling about this.
I don't want you ever to think that I'm going to be going against you. I'm always on the side of the cooks.
Do you honestly think that we could do from raw state every day? Do you really?
Yes.
Alice is forced to be reckoned with. If I had her on my side, she would be epic. To take her to other elementary schools and roll out change, can you imagine?
I think he's thinking that we should do more fresh. There's no way.
I love when he calls her a lunch lady and she gets offended. What the hell should he call him? A cook? Give me a break. Listen, my friend's 9-year-old throws a bag of microwavable popcorn in the microwave, pops it for 2 minutes. Is she a cook too? Because that's pretty much what you do every day for kids. You cook that way, if you call it cooking. So he's trying to get these cooks on his side, okay? Because, listen, if he can get them to understand his mission, it will be easier for him to deliver his message to the powers that, you know, that be, the people who make these decisions. But instead, he's getting resistance from them. You know, they're fighting him, but he's not telling them they're the enemy, though. They're just preparing this crap because that's what they're told to do. But if he can get them to understand that this crap is bad for the kids, and, you know, if they can get them to be willing to cook raw food every day, healthier stuff for kids, then he'd have this team behind him. But listen how they say, it's potatoes. Look at the first ingredient, potatoes. That's this bullshit they've been trained to believe all their lives. If the first ingredient on the content says, you know, it's such and such, well, then it's such and such. Never mind that the other 19 ingredients are all chemicals that you can't even pronounce. Listen, when I buy a potato, it doesn't have a list of ingredients printed on the side. You want to know why? Because it's a frickin' potato.
These lunch ladies, they can do anything, but they need the permission and the power from above to tell them to do it. But at the same time, I want these lunch ladies to care about what's in the food that they're cooking for their kids.
Good news or the bad news?
Whatever.
Give us the bad first.
The bad news is I think I didn't like what the kids ate today when I saw breakfast. I'd never seen kids being given pizza of any kind for breakfast before. I think, you know, to go from pizza to nuggets.
Those things are set up on a monthly nutrition analysis on the meals.
I don't think I'm here because I think the nutritional analysis is great. It's that kind of food that's killing America.
You don't have processed food in England?
God, yes. And it's okay. Killing England too. I mean, this freezer's full of stuff here. I mean, I think I have a problem with it. I don't get the impression that's mutual.
You're right. I mean, I think we have a good system. And I think we feed our kids good.
I think you've got a great system. I would say you don't feed your kids good.
It was like proper tumbleweed, cold, icy. It wasn't a good atmosphere.
Do you really recognize any of those ingredients?
Ground beef, first ingredient.
You know, I think you're taking this up with us, and you should be taking it up with the one else us.
I'm not having a go at you.
Chicken breast is the first ingredient here.
Do you not question any of that stuff? Look.
What's wrong with that?
What's right with that? Would you eat that?
Yes, I think they're good.
And that list of ingredients doesn't bother you in the slightest?
Not in the slightest.
Okay. You know what? It doesn't bother me that adults eat it. What bothers me is that kids eat it.
I don't have a problem with this food. I really don't. I mean, I know there's preservatives. There's preservatives in salad mix.
I'd ask you to make a salad mix. It takes 2 seconds.
Not for 450 people. It doesn't.
Yes, it does.
We can't go in and do it ourselves and change it. It has to come from the top.
And I know that feeling. And I know what it's like when you're told what to do and you're measured on what you should do and you've got the nutritionals and all that. So I'm talking about causing a big fuss and changing things. Change.
Yeah, okay.
I know you're not convinced, but...
We said we would try or you wouldn't be here. So we'll try.
Well, let's go for it.
If he can help us, fine, but I don't... I'm wondering if this is not a mistake from day one.
They see nothing wrong with that process. So what I've got to do now is cook my fresh recipes with a bunch of cooks that don't really want me there. Great. Can't wait.
The fact that she thinks there's preservatives in salad mix is just freaking hilarious. This is the person feeding your kids. You know what's in salad mix? Salad. That green shit that grows out of the ground, dumb bastard. Listen to this. He gets his ally, Pastor Steve. The guy knows how bad it is. He knows how bad it's going to get. And he knows how badly this city, and this country for that matter, needs the help.
There's this guy here called Pastor Steve. I've heard a lot about him, and he's just sick of seeing his congregation die. So I want to go and see what he's got to say.
Just recently, in 2008, Center for Disease Control report came out. Huntington, in our area, came out as the most obese city in the most obese region in the most obese country in the world. What, my friends, does that tell us about our culture? When we don't think anything about being the worst in the entire world. God bless you guys. Thanks for coming today. Hey. Hey, Jamie.
It's nice to meet someone that's doing the same sort of thing that I'm doing. Yeah, it's just...
I tell you, I've heard about the school lunch programs that you've done over in England. If anybody's going to get this done, I believe Jamie Oliver can do it. We need help. And the fact that he's bringing what he does here to Huntington. See?
Cheers.
This is going to change lives. This is going to save lives.
Without question, the only reason that I'm here is because of that same report that has inspired you.
Right. And let me tell you what. If you're going to be here 3 or 4 months, are you going to see people with major health problems? I mean, one thing you didn't see from here today are the 20, 30 people that couldn't make it if they wanted to. Their health is just too bad. When winter time comes, every other week I've got a funeral. Let me tell you what. Like, here's our church directory.
Right.
I can just go through here. This guy died an early death. I mean, I can go page after page. Just had major surgery on his heart. Passed away due to, you know, complications due to obesity.
Just seeing him flick through that book,
and just going, he's dead, she's dead, she's dead. That was diabetes, you know, heart disease.
Stroke due to obesity.
It definitely put everything in perspective here in Huntingdon.
Something has to radically change, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're dying before their time.
My dream really is that Huntingdon, if they let me in, can be an example to the rest of America and the rest of the world.
If you can help in Huntingdon, you can help anywhere. I'm not blowing smoke. I believe that God has you guys here right now. This is what we've been praying for a year. It's a major problem in our community, man. And I just believe that God is opening up doors to where we can see change, not only in Huntington, but all over the world. So, yeah. Man, thank you so much.
Pastor Steve, I thought it was inspiring. He was to the point. So it's like finding a friend, you know what I mean? Like, he's a pastor in his church and I'm a chef in my kitchen, but yet we had so much in common. We were both relieved to meet each other, you know? It was great.
Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution, ABC Fridays. Do not miss this show. He's already into his third week. You can catch the replays online if you like. Don't miss this, all right? I don't have children, but I care about all children. I've got nieces and nephews, even some that aren't even related to me. I don't want to see them continue down this path. Not when I think that we can help. That would be a tax hike. I'd be willing to pay for this. JamieOliver.com for information. You can help this. You can help encourage our government to do more than they're doing. Jamie wants to take this petition to the White House after the series airs to show President Obama and the First Lady how many people across the country really care about this. He wants to ask for their support. Now listen, I already know that President Obama cares about this issue. I mean, I played numerous news reports here on the show time and time and time again. Michelle Obama is all over this. She was all over this from day one. And I think that they're the right man and woman in the White House right now to do something, to get something started at the very least. Now, Marion Nestle from The Atlantic, she wrote an article on this subject saying that TV is one thing, but Jamie Oliver's school intervention is over in real life and has already been evaluated by researchers at West Virginia University. They asked 7 questions of 109 fourth and fifth grade students, 35 teachers, 6 cooks, and the county food service director. And here are the results of those questions. The first question they asked was, are the new menu items acceptable to the students? Not much. 77% said that they hated the food, but 66% said that they tried new foods. Do the new menus impact lunch participation? Yes, badly. Participation decreased by 9%. Does removal of flavored milk impact milk consumption? Yes. Milk consumption decreased by 25%. They were feeding kids milk that was pink and chocolate milk. So basically like the Nestle's Quick stuff, strawberry and chocolate. They just can't have regular milk. It's got to be flavored. So don't give kids colored milk and they'll drink it 75% of the time. How do teachers perceive the new menus? Not too differently than they perceive the old ones, but they thought the new ones were more nutritious. So the teachers at least, saw that they were nutritious. Do the new menus impact the workload for food service staff? Yes, they didn't like it. They didn't like the fact that they had to work harder and longer, and they preferred their own food. Do the new menus impact meal costs? Yes, labor and ingredient costs were higher. Do the new menus meet the federal and state nutritional guidelines? Yes and no. Fat and saturated fat were higher than USDA targets. Sodium and fiber met guidelines, and vitamins and minerals exceeded targets. Fat and saturated fat were higher than USDA targets. Higher than pizza and tacos and shit? You gotta be kidding me. Wow. Anyway, Marion said that we need to remember that this is reality TV. It's not a real school intervention. Real school interventions start at the beginning of a semester, not right in the middle. I mean, he just dropped right in there. And she says it's about food, not entertainment. Now, I understand you've got to have a little drama, but it still was kind of an effective thing. They also do not leave it up to the kids to decide what to eat. You tell the kids what to eat, and they're going to eat that. Marion was interested in knowing what happens in schools in that town after the TV crews leave. Because if the programs are any indication, real changes take place inside the heads of all these people who are actually, in the middle of it all. It's a great piece. Interesting thoughts. It's a It's a big piece of the pie, pardon the pun. I credit Jamie Oliver for trying something like this in the first place. It would be great to see it actually work somewhere. I think that would be awesome. Hey, I promised fellow LA food blogger Emily Ho that I would mention this. Emily volunteers with the Culinary Historians of Southern California, and she wanted me to let any of you in the Southern California area know about this upcoming event at the Central Library, the LA Times Food Section Gals of the 1960s through the 80s are going to be talking this weekend. And although food media has changed a lot since the heyday, which is the 60s and 80s, Emily says they're going to have some fun stories and insights and some refreshments afterward. Betsy Balsley, I'm probably slaughtering that one, Donna Dean, Rose Dosti, and Barbara Hansen, the LA Times Food Section Gals, they're speaking on the heyday of the food section of the Los Angeles Times this Saturday, April 10th, 10:30 in the morning at the Los Angeles Public Library, Mark Taper Auditorium. It's in the downtown Central Branch, 630 West 5th Street in Los Angeles. It's free to the public. If you're interested in hearing what they have to say and you're in the area, visit. It's a, you know, it sounds like a really good talk. And isn't it kind of sad, really? Listen, Gourmet Magazine goes out. Newspapers are dying off left, right, and center. We're actually talking about the heyday of the LA Times food section as if it were a dinosaur. Those of you not in the LA area should know this. If you live in New York and you take the New York Times, that food section may be the best in the country. The LA Times food section was equally as good. Now, the heyday was in the 60s and 80s. It's been okay since, but it was really hitting its stride, at least in the 80s. I mean, back when I was reading it, because, you know, before then, I couldn't read much. Hey, listen, I just learned how to read last week. It was Savoir, Gourmet, and Bon Appetit all wrapped in one. These girls produced a food section anywhere from 40 to 50 pages every week, had really popular columns. They had things like Culinary SOS and Borderlines, a lot of really great original recipes. I mean, there was a lot of force behind it. They had amazing resources to work with and produced a really good food section, and it's sad that it's just kind of going away. So if you want to check out their website, culinaryhistoriansofsoutherncalifornia.org. Is that the website? culinaryhistoriansofsoutherncalifornia.org. That is a big-ass domain. Somebody needs a tiny.
Pretty good debate here. Kids need to eat better. We know that. But banning toys in fast food kid meals, is that the way to go? That's what's going on. Santa Clara County, California, they're considering a ban on toys in the fatty fast food meals. I think it's going too far. I think it's a parent's job to make sure that kids eat right. Why do you want to take away? This is a tradition. You got to go back to Cracker Jack, 1912, the toy surprise in the box. Join me to talk about this, the man behind the ban, Ken Yeager, Santa Clara County president of the County Board of Supervisors. Ken, thanks for being with us. Also with us, Jot Condi, CEO of the California Restaurant Association. Ken, again, I agree with you in spirit that we want to see our kids eat better. And if I'm a parent, let's be wise about how often we go to the fast food place. But isn't it a parent's job? Don't we want parents making that call and not the government about what our kids eat?
Well, actually, we're trying to help the parents here in Santa Clara County. We know that the fast food industry is spending almost $500 million on direct advertising to kids, and there's always a promotional gimmick or toy that's associated with the meals that they are promoting. And so parents just don't really have much of a chance when their kids are pestering them to go to a particular place for a particular toy. And the reason why it's of concern is because now in California we know that one out of every child from 2 to 19 is either overweight, obese, and now extremely overbeat.
Yeah. Jot, your best argument against this. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, do some restaurants offer toys with their meals? Yes. Is there a toy at the bottom of a Cracker Jack box? Yes. Is it really affecting childhood obesity? Probably not. There's no studies to suggest that. This is a serious problem. We just don't think that government stepping in between a kid and his or her toy is really the answer.
Hey, Top Chef Masters 2 debuts this Wednesday on Bravo. Don't miss that. Chef Ludo is going to be on, I think, the third or fourth week. A lot of really good chefs this year. I can't wait. We really need Top Chef fix, man. I'm jonesing for a Top Chef fix, so I'm so happy it's coming back. All right, kids, listen, I'm out of here. Thanks for checking in. Thanks for your feedback on the taco truck video. Appreciate that. Hope you guys have a great week. Thanks to Jack Nicholson for the help on the intro, to CNN, Planet Green, and ABC for the audio clips. Music in this episode from Thousand Foot Crutch. If you like the song, you can download it from the iTunes store. Follow our link on the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. We'll take you right there. Or better yet, get it from the band's official site. Give them your money. Thousandfootcrutch.com. That's crutch with a K. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Cheers. I got a bad case. I'm turning it up. It's been cold in here, so fire it up. I got a bad case. I'm turning it up. It's been cold in here, so somebody fire it up. Come on and fire it up. I'm in love.
Truth.